KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
You know how it goes. Can't believe how much of this NFL Combine Nick has me watching.
The remote is right there, Steve, if you want to change the channel.
Actually, one of the things I actually enjoyed was the press conference with Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Obviously, I'm not a Seattle fan, but this is going on their 10th year together. Because Carroll was the quarterback when Oregon had that kind of changing of the guard victory on Halloween Day 2009.
Coach.
What?
You said Carroll was the quarterback, which is a long, long time ago.
So he would have been in his 50s, and having eligibility would have been left.
Being a player coach in college, no, that would be something.
Has that ever happened except like a million years ago?
I mean, to think, it probably would be possible, but the athletic department would be saving millions of dollars by not paying a coach money because you can't pay a student athlete because then they wouldn't be able to play. Then they would just be a coach.
How much do you want to see it, though?
Oh, so badly now. Oh, man, you get a guy calling his own plays. You get a quarterback who's trying to run the offense, who's coaching the offensive linemen and wide receivers while getting into the huddle. He's yelling at the offensive coordinator while trying to conduct the defense.
So would there be a time that the administration would decide, well, we're firing the coach, but we need the guy to play quarterback?
Oh, man. That would be tough.
So you're saying maybe Pete Carroll could have done better than Matt Barkley that day. It couldn't have gotten much worse for USC.
50-50, really.
So he took over 2010. So actually the math is, it's been 10 years. This is their 11th year. But they've been a really remarkable 1-2 punch with that franchise, which had started to slip, you know, from being the NFC champ after the 2005 season to, you know, it was time to make a move. Make a move, man. Come on. We're going to lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline. Remember, in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll talk with Oregon sharpshooter of the number 3 Duck women, Erin Boley, will join us. And like I said, there's it's a really big night, in particular for Pac-12 men's basketball. With well, there was one game last night, and Stanford beat Utah to keep themselves in the vicinity of the booble. Otherwise, we got ASU at Pauley. Colorado is in the Bay Area to play Cal. Of course, our game is 8 o'clock. We've got all the action on the radio here. If you're looking for the game, it's on ESPN2. But with all that said, let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Usually at this time I say we're going to get our view from the north, but in this case, how about get our view from the east? Yep! Lot to discuss, covering the Combine for The Athletic. On Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things in the Hoosier State?
It's cold. No one told me it was going to be this cold. You know what? You know what I suck at right now? I'm going to tell you right now, straight up. And I don't admit to sucking at many things. But when I travel, I suck at checking the weather and packing appropriately. Because it is freezing here, bro, and I'm not prepared.
By the way, if only there were a device or some way to find out what the weather out of your area was.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if we could find. Yeah, I only have 2 weather apps on my phone. See, I'll tell you, I suck at it. and there's no reason.
Well, also, if you're like me, you don't do those silly things like climb mountains or ski or do things where if you plan wrong, you wind up frozen to death and they read about you on the 6 o'clock news.
Right, and if I did, I would certainly be frozen to death somewhere, no doubt.
You know, I was thinking that you've covered media day at Super Bowls. This is a combine. They both have that element of a little bit of a meat market and massive humanity, and you're not even watching a game. So what's the experience like here?
It's very similar to the lead up to a Super Bowl. Very similar. They, you know, they try out the players in groups, one or two positions each day, eight guys at a time, all on their own little podiums. And a bunch of media people around them and bouncing around from player to player asking questions. Very similar.
This morning on Twitter, you posted a picture of a guy who I always say might not get his due as a great Duck. He stepped on the field as a freshman for Chip Kelly, played those 4 years, three conference titles, a Rose Bowl, Fiesta Bowl, played in the Natty versus Auburn. Excuse me. How cool was it running into Michael Clay, and what's he up to now?
Michael Clay worked for the 49ers. I think he does some player development or scouting or something, and he actually was walking down this convention center here is huge, by the way, but he was walking along with a guy I know named Crowley Hanlon, who works for the 49ers, who is the cousin of my godson. So I've known him since he was literally like 2 years old, like literally. And they're walking and I see him. And I just ignored the kid I knew, known for, you know, 20-something years. And went straight to Clay. I'm like, I see you anyway. And I was like, what's up? I gave him, you know, this bro hug. He's like, hey, how you doing? Man? Just, we kind of remember this for a minute. And he's one of my favorite guys I ever covered. Like, he was so professional, so cool. Had great things to say, great comments. Always very personable. So it was good to catch up with him. And then there's a lot of guys, like, I started thinking more about, you know, you watch these kids grow up. You know, you watch them come in at 18, and sometimes they're cocky, overly so, or sometimes they're shy or more of an introvert, like Mariota, like Herbert, even like Dennis Dixon. I mean, you just sort of watch them blossom as, you know, young adults. And as a parent who has a kid who's an adult, you see, like, you've been there before, you've seen this before, and so you sort of know the stages they're in. So, yeah, it's kind of cool to bump into him. It's always nice to bump into the old guys I used to cover from back in the day.
Nah, he was terrific. Yeah. Here's something I want to run by you. Charles Davis, who's a great football analyst, today was talking about Justin Herbert and that played to death leadership question. He said it's ridiculous, but he brought up an interesting point that most college quarterbacks now are taught to make plays. You know, they look to the sideline for the call, and unlike from another time, it's not like they get in a huddle and you get a more traditional field general. So he said basically to kind of put that on Herbert is not understanding the landscape of the game. That makes sense?
I guess. He's still a huddle, though. No, was he saying they don't huddle as much?
Well, he's just saying so many don't, and in particular, obviously, a guy coming from Oregon.
Yeah. No, I mean, okay, so I think he's half right. Leadership is more than the huddle. The huddle's calling the play, and I guess telling people to snap in line, I guess, but it's more than that. It's what you sort of do on the sideline. It's your demeanor. It's not letting things get to you. It's always remaining calm and cool and like, I got this no matter what. You can do 4 interceptions, but you got this, you know. And I believe, I wrote something today, which is sort of a half column, half feature. I talked to the three old linemen here, Hanson Lemieux and Throckmorton. I talked to Dye. I talked to Breland, all about how much Herbert's grown up since his freshman year. And I even asked him, I said, you look back at when you were 18, look back at 18-year-old Justin Herbert, you know, what do you see and how different are you now? Something like that. That was actually phrased better than I asked him. But he said, you know, I'm a different person. That I'm not that kid anymore. And I thought his whole demeanor today, the way he walked in, the way he walked out, the way he answered the questions, the way he stood up there, it was like he showed signs during the season, don't get me wrong, but he's grown up so much. And I just think the idea that the things that dogged him when he was younger, when he was too emotional, he let things get to him, that stuff's over with. Like, that stuff's done. I think he's going to be a great leader. I think he's just scratching the surface. Like, I believe Justin Herbert at 25 is going to be so much more mature and so much a better leader than he is at 22. He's just beginning to scratch the surface. And all the guys I talked to just were like, look, He's a competitor. He's a baller. We followed him. He's outspoken behind closed doors. Maybe y'all didn't see it, but we saw it, and we all believe him as a leader, and I think he's going to be just fine in the NFL.
Yeah, I remember you were actually kind of on him earlier in a positive way. I mean, let's face it, he got thrown to the Wolves in 2016. I mean, they were a bad team. It started with a really good Husky right. team. But so going back to then, what was it about him where you were like, I know what we're seeing is far from a finished product, but he had some of those qualities on display kind of early.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the number one thing, every NFL quarterback prospect can throw. There's different levels. There's the Elway arm, obviously, Mahomes arm.
Right.
You know, there's lesser arms. But they all can throw. They all obviously are athletic. They all obviously have been successful. They wouldn't be even at the combine, let alone in the NFL, right? So the thing that separates are the instincts, the natural feel, the poise, and the intelligence in making, you know, the right read and the right play and not panicking and feeling like you own it. And I felt like in that Cal game, early on he struggled. This was after the UW game. He showed some nice things. I thought he showed some nice things in the UW game, but I didn't overly go off. But I felt the Cal game, like he would look left and come all the way back to the other side of the field. Like, he was scanning the entire field as a true freaking freshman without the benefit of summer and spring. Like, he had been on the team for, like, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whatever. And then in the throws were effortless, velocity all over the place, wherever he wanted to put it. He was throwing darts. He threw 6 touchdowns in that game. He struggled early, and I was like, they might have to go to Dakota to get to win this game. And then it was like, as soon as I tweeted that, he just went off. Right? And by the end of the game, I was just like, there's nothing that people look for in an NFL prospect that you can't see from this one game in him. It was all there. And I was like, he's going to be a first-round pick. He's just too talented and too smart, and he's only going to get better. But the question mark was, we all saw him crumbling. He was in tears after the interception. He's got to grow up. And Taggart said the same thing when he got there by spring. He was like, this guy's got to grow up. And other people were saying, he's got to grow up. And I'm like, he's 19 years old. He's going to grow up. You know, he can't even buy a drink yet. Give the guy some time. And he's matured greatly since then.
No, it's been awesome to see, talking with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. I'll get back to the Ducks, but you tweeted something today about the Seahawks. Fancy free agency as a chance to get, you know, Reggie White or Kawhi Leonard, when the real goal is just to improve. And we talked about it, but Jermaine Ifedi, the tackle, and correct me if I'm wrong, nobody's saying he's Walter Jones, but instead you're saying, well, who are you going to guarantee to bring in that's an upgrade?
All right, so this is funny, so don't laugh at me, but I'm only giving this anecdote because I just thought it was kind of cute in a little way. So my son and I play Madden, and he does franchise modes, and I do franchise mode, and we sometimes do something together. And so in the offseason of the franchise mode on Madden, you have free agents just like in real life. You have to balance your cap. It's really a simulation of what you do as a GM.
Right.
And then you scan the free agent market. And I remember, like, thinking about what we were going to do with Ifedi in our game. Because we did a franchise with the Seahawks, right? So I went and I checked every tackle on the game. And I was like, oh, my God, there's hardly any tackles on Madden rated over 80. And 80 is sort of where you start, like, the really good player. And, again, I'm talking about a video game. People are like, what the hell are you talking about a video game for? But my point is, that game mirrors real life. And then if you go check, like, Pro Football Focus and their grades on guys, if you go check what people say about offensive linemen in the league, there is a clear shortage on high-end offensive tackles in the entire league, let alone guys available in free agency. So someone like Jermaine Ifedi, even if you look at him and go, he's average, he might be average, but compared to everyone else, he's damn good because everyone else is pretty much average, if that makes any sense. So what are you going to do? How are you going to replace him? It's not like you get rid of him and upgrade to a right tackle who's a 90. Well, no, because there aren't any available. Again, I'm going back to Madden.
No, so I see what you mean.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. So it was just funny to me how the video game was mirroring life, and it's just true. So on our game with my son, I'm like, we're resigning him. He's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, we're resigning him. Got you. And so I believe the same thing. Like, if they let him go, you pretty much either are going to sign someone. If you are to find someone a little bit better, he's going to cost you a boatload. Because I guarantee you, Jermaine Ifedi is getting 10 or more. So someone better is going to get you 14, 15. Are you really going to pay 14 or 15 for right tackle right now? You got to re-sign Clowney and maybe Jaren Reed and other guys? I don't think you are. So you stick with him. The other thing is this. He's only 25.
Right.
Right? I think he's only missed a couple of games. So he's durable. You took him in the first round. He's reliable. He's there. Yes, he's not elite. But what's he going to be at 28? And I looked at Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown, who's like 33 now, he didn't become a Pro Bowl caliber player until 28. A lot of offensive linemen are better from 27 to 34 than they are from 22 to 27. It's just a fact. They've seen it all. They've got more mature. They've got that man strength kicks in. You know what I'm saying? So I think there's no way you can give up on him.
No, and like you mentioned, over the last 3 years, he's missed one game. So he's been durable.
Yeah, and it's not like Russell Wilson getting killed because he's out there. If I had a quarterback who couldn't move, I might be a little more skittish. But you have a quarterback who's probably better out of the pocket. So why not have a right tackle who might blow a couple of pass protection reads and let Russell Wilson run around?
As far as some of the other Ducks there, Jacob Breland, who, remember, before he played six games. He missed eight games. But still, his six touchdowns, I think only Red and Johnny Johnson had more. It was a serious injury. So be it a late-round pick, undrafted free agent, how do you think he eventually gets his shot? And do you like his game transfer into Sundays?
Yeah, the question mark with him is that he's not probably going to be a very good blocker in the box. So he's not going to be a true, stick him in the box, run behind him tight end. But a lot of teams aren't really necessarily relying on that kind of guy. They're flexing out tight ends. They're putting him in the slot, basically, where it's maybe easier for them to block a linebacker more often than blocking a defensive end still in the run game. Teams are spreading people out. So you look at him, I'm not saying he's Greg Olsen, but he's more like, I think, a lesser – he doesn't block as well as Will Dissly, but I think he's going to be as good a receiver as a Will Dissly, who obviously was doing really well in Seattle before he got injured. He's got decent size. He can run. He's got good hands. He says he's not able to work out this week. Obviously, he's got a ways to go to rehabilitate, but everything's going to be fine. And I definitely think he gets drafted and makes a team and could be, receiving more of an H-back style guy,
sure.
14 for sure. Yeah,
no, I like his shot. A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of The Athletic. Juwan Johnson obviously was a transfer from Penn State. High hopes, injuries again, but he had some really big moments. Clutch against the Cougs at USC, the Rose Bowl. I guess what's the buzz about the kind of player he might be in the NFL?
Yeah, so I talked to the NFL scout about all these guys and posted something about this. And the only thing the guy said about Juwan, he said, I loved him in the USC game. Like, he looked legit in the USC game. And obviously, he had three touchdowns, right? He was pretty much unstoppable that day. Likes him as a big target, obviously. Hands, not elite, but good enough. And the speed is going to be the thing. How well does he run? If he can run, 4.64, then you're like, okay, he's a big, tall, strong guy. If he runs a 4.64, that's not blazing, but for his size, that's good. But if he runs in the 4.7s, then it's like, okay, yeah, I got a big guy, but he's never going to get separation on anybody, so his size is not going to matter that much unless I'm inside the 10 and throw him a fade. So I think it's going to come down to how he runs, but this guy I talked to felt like he has a chance to stick somewhere. Doesn't ever see him really being a marquee starter, though.
All right, and lastly, Troy Dye, who's one of those. Yeah, he might not be the biggest or the fastest, but I really like when he's on my team, with a lot of heart. What's the read, the word, and the guys you're talking about on TD and when he might hear his name called?
Yeah, I think he could fall somewhere where Justin Hollins did. I think Justin Hollins was a fifth-round pick somewhere in there. He's an undersized linebacker who I asked him today if he plan on putting on more weight. He said no, they'll stick around 230, which is, weight wise that's not bad, but he's 6'4". 6'2", 230 is different than 6'4", 230. He's lanky, obviously. This guy I talked to about him said, that he believes that if he gets on a team that, uses him in space, he believes he can probably cover tight ends and backs, and probably come off the edge as a decent pass rusher, maybe. That if he finds the right niche, he does well on special teams, and he certainly can play in the league. I agree. I use the analogy describing him on another show to my feelings about Dylan Brooks. There was a lot of questions about Dylan Brooks as a basketball player playing in the NBA. I believe he was going to make it because although he didn't do anything really great, he did a lot of things well.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel that way about Dye. He doesn't really do a lot of things that you would classify as great at the NFL. Like, he's not a big hitter. He's not a big pass rusher. He's not Brian Urlacher in the middle, you know, dropping back with 4 or 5 speed like Urlacher used to do. But he does everything well, and there's no way you can tell me that if each team in the league is carrying 7 linebackers, that there's 224 linebackers better than Troy Dye. I don't believe that. I think he's going to find a place on the team and stick around for a while.
All right. Well, stay warm. Check your weather
app. One more quick thing. Give me like 20 seconds.
Go ahead.
You'll be shocked by this. The scout I talked to, though, totally down on all 3 Oregon linemen.
Really?
I asked him. He said, I don't like any of them. He goes, maybe Lemieux. He goes, but they're just not that good. And I'm like, okay, explain. Because I believe they were overrated a little. And I love them. Don't get me wrong. But I thought all the high level best line in the nation. I'm like, okay, I don't think I believe that. But he just said there's some lack of athleticism. There's some strength issues. There's some bend issues. And he just doesn't believe that they're going to be very good. And I said, so you're telling me that your team would not recommend them at all? He goes, as free agents, maybe. But then he said, but listen, though, this is I'm one scout. He's like, other people might love them, and that's what matters. But for us, he's like, I just saw too many games where they were too inconsistent. But I just thought I'd throw it out there from a reporting standpoint.
No, hey, let's face it. Some people thought Leafs should go over Manning, and most and everybody passed on Tom Brady. So
100%.
The experts, not always spot on, folks.
Right, exactly.
Aaron Fentress, Aaron J. Fentress on Twitter. Enjoy the rest of the combine. Like I said, stay warm, travel safe, and look forward to talking next week. Great stuff,
right,
AF. Thanks a lot, man.
All right.
Take it easy. 284-8571, your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know, when he brought up Justin Hollins, I had forgotten, because somebody asked me about him on text near the end of the Oregon football season, so it was around November, and I said, you know, he was having trouble getting on the field. Then he started to figure in a lot more, and I think he ended up playing about a third of the snaps on defense. So, you know, he actually started playing, and I think they were talking about how he participated in special teams, and he ended up making, you know, you could get the advanced analytics online and make yourself nuts. But the bottom line is, okay, 267 snaps, 25%, but it was a little more back-ended. He started to get more of a role. I remember taking a look at that guy with his size, his speed, his ability to make plays behind the line of scrimmage and drop into coverage. I was like, if nothing, he's going to get drafted and become a special teams demon and then, you know, perhaps work his way into the defensive rotation. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll be back. More sports talk comes your way next. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top 5 RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Guarantee.com.
If he is not a successful quarterback, it won't be because his personality isn't loud, any more so than Marcus Mariota struggled lately. And people say it's his personality. That's not the issue. His personality was the same at Oregon. He won a Heisman Trophy.
Well, if you insist. Welcome back. By the way, that was Charles Davis on personality impacting effectiveness. Welcome back to Sports Talk, 284-8571. That is your Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I'm going to insist on it. We just got to see a little bit of little bit of Justin Herbert hurl. We always joke about what would you like to do at the combine. I really like that drill. So you've got a wide receiver. He's standing just out of bounds, just off the field. And he faces one way, catches a pass, faces the other way, catches a pass, and then runs kind of not diagonally.
Horizontally.
Horizontally, thank you, across the field and gets a pass and turns around, gets one, then the other. I think catches 4 passes before he crosses the field. That looks like a fun drill.
It's called the gauntlet.
The gauntlet?
The gauntlet, yeah. And they showed footage of a tight end who, I'm guessing they tell you what to do and you're standing in line and you're watching other teams do, know what's going on. You're watching the other guys do the drill. And this tight end gets in line, and I'm guessing those first two spin around passes are to kind of mess with you to make sure that you're really paying attention to what's going on. Because he took off onto the field and was looking off to his right, and he got bonked on the back of the head from a pass coming to his left. That'll mess with it. I mean, it's just like it's like a game of when you're trying to hit a pinata and they spin you around a little bit and then you're trying to reorientate yourself. What a good test, huh? Try to keep your head.
Is that
in the game.
Like when you put your forehead on the bat and spin around and try and run the first?
Some dizzy bat?
Yeah,
it's maddening, man. That's some hard stuff.
It's madness, man. I gotta tell you, I cannot wrap my head around what I'm reading from Jeff Darlington and the story on ESPN and CBS Sports, and who was a guest, I think, on Rome today, talking about Tom Brady operating under the belief he will enter free agency and play elsewhere other than New England. I'll tell you what, 43 years old, is there a team out there that's going to max him out and pay him $70 million guaranteed over 2 years? Tom Brady, I just think, and, you know, he's obviously a super sharp guy and a great businessman, and, you know, not many people understand this league more than Tom Brady, but you can't even negotiate until the 16th. I like how they call it the legal tampering period opens March 16th. So it's like they admit, yeah, they're going to tamper, but we got it. I mean, you know, at a certain point, you can't expect teams who need, like, you know, a quarterback to kind of be sitting around. I like how they say the new NFL league year starts at 1 o'clock our time on March 18th. So get right on that. Brady on another team. Well, you know he's not going to, like, the Giants or Jacksonville, who are in a rebuild period. And by the way, he died. You know, when you think about the age and the league and the sport and the position, yeah, he'll play next year at 43 years of age. And I got to tell you, at a certain point, I don't care how much TB12 stretching or avocado ice cream he eats. There's got to be slippage. There's got to be slippage.
I was in the league.
I was in the pool.
I was in the league. There was slippage.
I was born in the 70s. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Dave. Dave, good afternoon. Thanks for calling. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. So I just want to let you know, big fan of the show. Been listening for probably 5-6 years.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, man. So I called in yesterday. I was the guy who asked you like 5 questions in about 10 seconds.
Right, about Pritchard, Dylan Brooks, and I forgot what else it was. I only have the capacity for like 2 thoughts.
Yeah, the other one was Mariota, and I just wanted to let you know I've actually done a little more research since talking to you. And, you know, I consider myself a big-time football fan, college and definitely NFL, but I actually was unaware that there was a certain date when free agents became, when they could actually sign free agents. So I didn't know that it was until March 18th that anybody could actually sign somewhere.
Right.
So now that I know that, I'm kind of more with the picture. But so when I asked you that question, it was more along the lines of, hey, I know you're a big-time Mariota fan, obviously. I'm a big-time Mariota fan. It was less along the lines of thinking that you just have some inside knowledge. It was just more along, you know, I'm excited to see where he ends up kind of a thing. So just wanted to relay that to you.
No, good stuff. I appreciate the call and the kind words. I hope we can live up to it. Thanks a lot, Dave. You know what the fun part is when you do this and you confess And you try to, and you, for the most part, I think we're objective and analytical. But when we want to have fun, it's like, screw that. We're just going to be complete fanboys. And so the analyst in every single one of us is like, okay, the best fit for one of your favorite players would be
my team.
And the other one is like, the hell with that. I'm just going to be a fan. Who would I like to see Mariota play for?
My team.
And so basically it would be like, Mahomes' time is up. Put him on Kansas City. You know, just some high octane offense.
Marcus in a really fun offense like that, where he gets to use his feet a little
bit.
His
skill set.
He's in an actual exciting, good, progressive 21st century offense. Oh, you kidding me? Marcus and Andy Reid, who, by the way, seem like polar opposites in terms of personality. Well, and just not totally polar opposites, but just Marcus very straight and narrow, and then there's Andy Reid, who's like, let's have 19 dinners today. Why not?
19 dinners seems like you're going to have to get at it early and do some purging. Maybe like a supermodel.
Andy Reid on Monday after winning the Super Bowl had 19 dinners. Let's be honest. He's had a couple free meals. And he's admitted as such.
Yeah, I don't see Andy Reid at Christmas or Thanksgiving or a celebration saying, I'm going to have the salad, some sautéed vegetables, and maybe some consommé.
Going to have cauliflower rice. We're going to have zoodles
the
for
The pie
dinner.
Alone.
Oh, yeah.
More
oh,
fat and sugar intake than I'll have in a month.
But he's exactly the kind of guy that, like, hey, Andy Reid, I would like to go to dinner with you and let's talk about what you know about football. And I would have the time of my life. That would be so much fun because he'd be talking food and it's something he's interested in. It's something that would kind of break the ice a little bit. You maybe don't get so much coach speak. You get to actually hear about what he's kind of, what he understands, what he's trying to do when he's coaching a game. And you get to eat with Andy Reid, which sounds like an adventure.
If you had to pick, who, if you went through like all the coordinators, offensive coordinators in the NFL, and you'd be like, who's most likely to be out to dinner with friends, ignore the conversation, and be designing plays on the tablecloth?
John Gruden. I know you said offensive coordinators, but that's John Gruden.
Well, you know what? There's a difference between an offensive coordinator and a head coach that calls plays. Different title, but I see what you mean. You're 100% right.
It's just I can't name any offensive coordinators outside of the one for my team and Eric Bieniemy because he's not a head coach. Those are the offensive coordinators that I know. I think. Wait, no, isn't what's his name? Joe Brady? Isn't he an offensive coordinator?
Well, he was the passing game coordinator.
But the Panthers hired him to be their offensive coordinator.
The guy who was hired to spend a year at LSU.
Yes,
right.
Joe Brady. Is he the offensive coordinator at Carolina? Did he get a big promotion on top of an NFL job?
I'm not sure.
Because I don't know enough about him, so I'm not really sure. But yeah, in terms of head coaches, who
yeah.
Are,
Matt Rhule got the head coaching job and lured him away from LSU.
There you go. Okay, so I know three offensive coordinators if you count the one for my Atlanta Fail Clowns.
Also, even though the offensive coordinator is Pete Carmichael, I think we all know that in New Orleans, Sean Payton, that's his offense. Because he was the offensive coordinator, I believe, for the Giants going back 20 years when he guided Kerry Collins to a stinking Super Bowl as an offensive coordinator.
He doesn't strike me as a
napkin guy.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as draw plays on the tablecloth guy. Like, he's going to be talking football, but John Gruden's going to get out there and he's going to, grab a pen. He's going to pluck it right out of the chest pocket of the waiter. He's going to say, this one's mine now. I'll pay for the tablecloth. It's okay. And he's going to be drawing up his Spider 2 XY bananas. His
fullback is the primary.
yeah, he's got all of his plays lined up. He's going to be talking strategy, talking motion. Maybe Kyle Shanahan, although he seems like a guy when you get him in a film room and he's talking about like what his pre-play motion does and how this opens up each receiver and how the zone running game works. Like, that's where you want to get into a room with Kyle Shanahan.
How about what was the likelihood that if you were out to dinner when he was here or at Philly or San Francisco or now at UCLA that Chip Kelly was going to be like, excuse me, waitress, I need your pen and I need a stack of napkins?
0%.
None?
Chip Kelly, if he's, I mean, I'm sure he loves football, but he's also the kind of guy that has a ton of like outside of football interests that I feel like when he's trying to get away from football, the last thing he wants to talk about is football. And I think if you get him down down at a
I disagree.
No, I think,
he's obsessed.
I think he loves his football, but I think you get to a point where you can only talk about so much football. And I think Chip Kelly would say, yeah, we're at a nice steakhouse, we're having dinner, let's talk about books or philosophy or something else. We don't have to talk about football right now, guys. Although, if you're at a table with football coaches, the only thing that's going to come up that they have in common is football. So they'll be talking football.
All right.
Talking shop.
So, here's a good text. Somebody says they could see Gruden out to dinner. setting up offense and defense and running plays with his French fries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's a big time.
Salt, pepper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So here.
I tell you what, man. You get this pepper shaker. He's lined up against the salt pack. Stop, Bears. Nothing going against him.
All right. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. If you want to jump on in, remember, kind of a, I'm going to call it a semi countdown. Because normally during the course of a show, if we did, when we do a pregame show, I don't know, has there been like one game this late during the week all year? So it's been like, okay, we're going to stop a half hour early, we're going to give you our pregame, they're turning it over to Joey Mack, and we'll have the all the action. But tonight, it's like, okay, we'll do the show. And by the way, in the 5 o'clock hour, look forward to our conversation with Oregon Hooper extraordinaire Aaron Boley of the women's team. And then at 6 o'clock, we'll get into, I guess we'll get the full hour of Duck Insider. And then at 7 o'clock, I'll pop back on for our Jerry's Home Improvement Center pregame show. And that's at 7:30. I'll throw it to Joey Mack over at the arena. And then tip-off time just past 8. But obviously, as the voice of Oregon men's basketball on 95.3 The Score, we'll have the game. And if you're looking for it on the boob tube, that'll be ESPN. What'd you come across?
Just a random thing. I was looking at the Oregon Lottery, my app today. The over-under for most NHL games is the high end is 6.5 when you get two really good offenses going up against each other. Today's Toronto Maple Leaf Florida Panther game, two of the highest scoring offenses with some of the worst goalies in the NHL. It was set at 7. The line was set at 7. It is 3-3 with 32 seconds to go at the end of the first period.
Now, why am I not on that over?
I don't know.
There was a start of a game the other day, and it was a college game, and the over-under was like 128, but like a quarter of the way through the game, it was like 47-46, and one of the guys, or the gambling guys I follow on Twitter, said, light a candle for the underbetters, and it was some ridiculous game, like Western Kentucky versus like... I can't even think of a team in the Sun Belt. Another team, Eastern Kentucky.
I wanted to bet it because I was like, wow, the thrill of watching a game with these two. Like Florida Panthers overs, they hit up more often than not.
If nobody's stopping the opposing
team
from
right, but
scoring.
Then I looked at 7. I was like, you need 8 goals to be scored in this game for this to hit. And like that is a lot of goals in a hockey game for two professional franchises. And I was like, so then do you take the under? And I don't know.
The cool thing about a 3-3 as opposed to 5-1 is, you know, there's going to be another goal scored somehow. It's like, you know, the value of the over in college football, once it gets to OT, you know, there could be a bunch more points coming.
Well, you think even if it's a goalless second period and the defenses show up, one team's going to have to score, which leads to the possibility of an empty netter, which is your 7th and 8th goal, or possibly just your you get tied 4-4 going into overtime because somebody scored with the empty net goal.
Yeah, you got it locked all kind of down. All right, before we break, I want to remind you our friends at Small World Auto, 2090 West 11th in Eugene, are celebrating a half century, 50 years of one of the most reputable auto places in, well, obviously in this area. Integrity, quality work, domestic or import. If your car needs service, call Marty and his A-plus staff at Small World Auto. They've been in the same location. Obviously, they've expanded substantially to where now they've got a machine shop and a 13 service bay repair shop. They encourage you, you know, keep up on those scheduled maintenance checkpoints, replace your service items, and if you haven't yet, they'd love to have you as a member of their ever-expanding family. Online at smallworldauto.com, and we appreciate the now near decade-long support of Marty and the good folks at Small World Auto. All right, break time. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the 4 o'clock hour of Sports Talk next. 95.3 The Score.
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at Sports Talk 95.3.
We don't get to hand our positions down to our children, and we don't get to hand the money down to our children. So that creates somewhat of a power asymmetry, because 1% of revenue for us means maybe a couple $100,000 tops for individual players. But for them, it means millions and billions of dollars for their family going forward.
Dominique Foxworth on the collective bargaining agreement on ESPN, the owners versus players, handing down a $1 billion franchise generation to generation versus players who, you know, need to make their money in the here and now. That was kind of interesting. It's like, yeah, Brian Urlacher doesn't get to hand down the middle linebacker position to his son. That would be an interesting way to run a franchise. Just who was on the 85 Bears? Where's your kids? Where's your nieces and nephews?
Talk about the importance of player safety if you had to hand down the position, because you've got to make sure that these guys are playing long enough to where their sons, if they have sons, are then eligible to actually play. These guys are going to have to play until their 40s and 50s, and if not longer, until they find a son or a cousin, a nephew of some kind, that can take over for them.
Has there ever been
the Urlacher family,
a father-son in the NFL, not who've played, I get that, but same position, same team? I mean, for example, Eli or Peyton never played for the Vikings or the Saints like daddy. Especially if you're like the grandfather, it's like, I saw my son play quarterback for the Giants. Then my grandson actually ended up playing quarterback for the Giants. I mean, the odds are astronomical.
Yeah, there are very few like major families of football. There's like the Matthews family where they've had Clay and
Bruce.
Casey Matthews. Jake Matthews of the Falcons is like a cousin, a part of that family. So that's a family that's putting together a pretty solid seven-side team.
They're one of the first families of the NFL. But like I said,
The Bosas. The Bosa family. Well, they've got two sons that play D-end, and I just Googled NFL families. John Bosa was also a defensive end for the Dolphins. It's not the same team. That's a father and a son, two sons, playing the same position all in the NFL.
And, for example, I don't think whether it's Bruce Matthews, Clay Matthews, they never played for the Falcons. Right. So, like I said, you know, Jake was a top 10 pick of Atlanta going back 6 years ago, and he's been their anchor. As a matter of fact, he missed the game his first year. None since. He's played in 80 straight games, including playoffs. He's definitely an elite player. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You know what we've never done? We've never played quarterback carousel / musical chairs. And that's something we may have to get to in the 5 o'clock hour. As far as right now, I wanted to get to some Pac-12 notes because, I was looking at the standings. And the truth is, even though they've had pockets of inconsistency, Oregon has navigated. They've found the way to the finish line every single solitary time they've been at Matthew Knight Arena. And I've got a sneaking suspicion. As a matter of fact, it's not a sneaking suspicion. If they beat the Beavs tonight, and obviously OSU has been an absolute thorn in their side, the sweep last year and the way they absolutely locked up the Duck offense at Gill Coliseum this year, then with the no-Cal teams coming in, especially, you know, one of them is Cal, who's not going to go into MKA and win this game. If you just put your green and yellow lensed glasses on and only viewed it in that way, if Oregon ends the conference 13-5, I'm going to say they're going to be the one seed in the conference tournament, which insanity means. So that's 13 days from now. Yeah, the Pac-12 tournament starts 2 weeks from yesterday. And that's a wowza yowza. And it's even earlier because the women's tournament, I think, starts a week from today. Whoa! Just saying it out loud gave me a little bit of a whoa.
Tannenism.
And of course, the... this is one of my favorite times of year where you. I always go to the CBS site because for the 32 conference tournaments that will start beginning on. No way. Monday is the third. Some of them start Monday.
No, Monday's the second.
Okay,
Tuesday
so Tuesday. Okay.
Yeah.
Tuesday, you got the A-Sun, Big South, Horizon League. And Patriot League. And then just every day, more and more and more through the 15th, which is Selection Sunday. And then on the 17th, St. Patty's Day, you get the play-in games. So, yeah, do the math there. It's like tick, 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 all of this insanity with 32 automatic bids and the 36 at-large bids is coming at us. Pretty quickly. And of course, next week we will give you an in-depth breakdown on who we like in the MEAC and if North Carolina Central could in fact defend their tournament title. Just kidding. So what's your favorite lesser known, I won't even call it a mid-major, a smaller conference? So American Athletic doesn't count. The WAC doesn't count. Mount West doesn't count.
Maction, baby.
Maction. That is a one-bid league, by
Maction.
The way. Buffalo, your defending champ. I think part of me always liked the Patriot League. You get like Bucknell or Colgate. Really like just a cut under Ivy League schools academically. All right, break time is here. 5 o'clock hour is next. 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.